The Office of the State Historian is proud to present the New Mexico Digital History Project podcast series.
First of all, I want to express my thanks and gratitude to Dr. Trujillo and Dr. Navas for their insight on what I consider a tremendous program, a tremendous opportunity. The state of New Mexico with the state archives and their other outlets in Albuquerque, I think, is a mecca for genealogy. I've been doing this kind of work for almost 40 years. It came about for me, rather than seeing someone else write about our traditions and our culture and our people, that sometimes it would be behoove us to be able to document some of our grandparents and great-grandparents and some of their stories and some of their pictures and some of their traditions. So I find myself working, and I guess it came about when I was working on a doctoral dissertation. I used to work, get my best work done from 3 to 5 o'clock in the morning, uninterrupted. Because once I would get to work, and the doors open, then I get nothing done. So up until today, even this morning, I wake up at 3 o'clock, and I work for a good 3-4 hours, and I do a lot of my research at that time. It's been a labor of love, okay? It's been a labor of love. It's more of a tremendous satisfaction to me. For example, I get requests 2, 3, 4 times a week, and I guess because of the membership in Ancestry.com, from all parts of the world, people that want to know, well, how is this person, why does this person appear in a database? And of course, nowadays with the electronic vehicle and so forth, we're able to correspond, email, telephone call, share information. So when I get into my presentation, I do particularly want to point out here that as I start this, I deliberately put down here my name as well as others, right? Because without other people's efforts, right, and willingness to share, none of this work would have ever been possible. And I think that the more we encourage people to do this, right? And by the way, I thank you for coming, right? I don't know if you had nothing else to do at 10:16 to 12 o'clock, but you made my day. The coat of arms is the Maestas coat of arms, and this particular coat of arms is a culture art by a young lady that is very active in the Spanish market. Her name is Beatriz Maestas, hand-woven, all right, hand-woven. But my fascination comes with Pedro Lucero de Godoy, and it starts from the work that Margaret Buxton did about 28 years ago, right? Very classic book. And I also point out, and most of you are, I'm sure, very well aware, that none of us would have ever begun this passion had it not been for Fray Angelico Chavez. Okay, and of course, Fray Angelico Chavez with the book Origins of the Mexico Families, and then his revision, as well as the work by John Cooligan and José Antonio Escobedo. Again, I consider those people probably the grandfathers of the genealogy, especially in the Southwest, the greater Southwest, New Mexico, Colorado, and so forth. Okay. Anyway, Pedro Cerro de Godoy, born 1600, Mexico City. Hit the wrong button here. Too many gadgets. What happened? Okay. Born in Mexico City, and at that time that was considered Nueva España. Okay. Died before the Pueblo Revolt. Married first to Petrolina de Zamora. Married a second time to Francesca Gomez y Robledo in 1641. Now, together with the Lucero de Godoy and the Gomez de Robledo, they're considered pretty much the founding fathers of the Villa de Santa Fe, right? And if anything, Pedro Lucero is sort of considered the progenitor of the vast family in Mexico, and then in our neighboring states, Colorado, Utah, most of our relatives from New Mexico journeyed up to Colorado for work, some journeyed further into Wyoming for work, and Idaho and Utah and so forth. And most people remain there, right? But the roots actually do originate in Mexico. I happen to be a direct descendant of the Lucero de Godoy as well as the Gomez y Robledo family. And I'll show you a little outline a little later on. By the way, if there are any questions, don't hesitate to feel free to. I would very much like to be able to visit with you. I know that sometimes you give an audience of an old college professor, and we're programmed to talk for about 50 minutes, and then we fail to ask questions. So if any time you have any questions, don't hesitate to raise those. Okay, timeline. Timeline. I started there in 1600, and have stopped here in 2009. Certainly, the heading did not come in there. But I show the birth of Pedro Lucero, the birth of Petrolina, the birth of Francesca, when they were married, when Petrolina died, when Pedro Lucero died. Again, the classic work in 1954 of Francisco Chavez, and then the work that I've cited, of which has been sort of the guide that I've taken off the Margaret Buxton study done in 1981. So for the period from 1981 to the present, her book is something like 400 pages, and in preparing for today's presentation, and by the way, there'll be a test on this shortly, two volumes, and there's a third volume. This thing now runs 1,250 pages of, again, Lucero de Godoy descendants. Just a week ago, a good friend of mine in Las Vegas, we worked together at the university, said, oh, by the way, I happen to have some Lucero de Godoy family members, and gives out this little report. And of course, it brings in a whole new line of descendants that come from the Tucumcari area and Chaparito, which is in south of Las Vegas. So it just keeps on growing. And of course, any of this work never ends, because the more I go, I met Mr. Carpenter here this morning, told me he's a Sasan, right? And of course, nowadays we have in Southern Colorado, we're very proud of two congresspeople, Ken and his brother John, and For those of you that may not be aware, one was a U.S. Senator, the other was a U.S. Representative. Prince Alassad was appointed Secretary of the Interior. Okay. Prince Alassad made news here in New Mexico when he indicated that his family had a presence in New Mexico of over 400 years. And I've seen a couple of the little reactions to that. And basically, when we look at people like Pedro Celso Godoy or Esteban Salcedo, as well as the Gomez de Robledo family, approximately mid-1600s and so forth, so plus or minus a few years, there has been a presence in New Mexico for a lot of people. But Ken Salazar and John Salazar and his brothers and sisters are very near and dear. My wife, Monica, her younger brother, is married to Ken and John Salazar's sister, okay? My son and I are trying to arrange a visit with the Secretary of Interior to invite Barack Obama to Los Rincones. You know where Los Rincones is? And you know, we're going to try to get a basketball game, go three on three. I don't know if he has time on his schedule or if he wants it public knowledge, but that's our next project. And but anyway, classic work, Fran Enrico Chavez. In my proposal, I indicated that I want to spend some time at the Fran Enrico Chavez Library, okay, and at the archives here. And I spent some time in Albuquerque at the Hispanic Cultural Center, as well as the Albuquerque Public Library, an extensive genealogical section, okay. Pedro Sotomayor de Godoy became an encomendador, rose to the positions of maestro de campo, and then lieutenant governor, commanding the commanding general of the royal troops in New Mexico in 1663. He was given 24 houses in the Pueblo of Pecos. According to David Lucero, and David Lucero, by the way, is a graduate of New Mexico Highlands. In his book, The Adobe Kingdom, indicates that Pedro Lucero de Godoy arrived in Santa Fe January of 1617, was 16 or 17 years old, was given two lots, two contiguous fields, 133 acres of land guaranteed to each of the early settlers in Santa Fe to ensure the development of the Villa. Okay. Petrolina, daughter of Bartolomé Montoya and Maria de Zamora, and you'll notice that Petrolina has actually taken on the name of the mother, right, which is not uncommon, okay? Born in La Ciudad de Mexico, Nueva España, came to New Mexico as an infant with her parents, died before 1647, a very young age, early in their marriage, and their children, right? And of course, from their children spawns, to a certain extent, a vast array of descendants. Francesca Gomez de Romero, and by the way, thanks to the director of the Fray Enrico Chavez, you know, they have the coats of arms up on top. I had almost thought of borrowing his ladder and going up with a digital camera, but he told me he had those on file, and lo and behold, he was correct. But these coats of arms are, I guess, put up at the Fray Enrico Chavez by sponsoring families, right? But I think coats of arms historically have been designed, and there's maybe some variation, but for the Lucero de Godoy, the Gomez de Robledo, even the maestras, right? And by the way, earlier, when I grew up in Southern Colorado, right, we used to pronounce the name Mestiz, right? But either because we didn't know any better, but we came to New Mexico, my first teaching job was in Taos. Everybody wanted to know why my name was Mestiz instead of Maestiz. Well, in doing a genealogy, of course, I was trying to find out that the original spelling was M-E-S-T-A-S. And the people in Spain came from a community called Mesta, right? So, in fact, they say it was Mestas, and then after that came Maestas and so forth. My nephews in Utah, of course, grew up as Maestas and so forth. But again, that's the further you get away from New Mexico, the various pronunciations take place. Francesca, daughter of Francisco Gomez, okay, and Ana Maria Robledo. Right, Maria Ana Robledo, of course, is a very interesting subject. She is the subject of Fran Federico Chavez's novel, which is A Lady from Toledo. Find some interesting interpretations by Fran Federico Chavez in that book, okay? Died in the massacre of 1680 in New Mexico. Okay? Francisca was a sister to Francisco. Okay, and incidentally, the Manuel Gomez Portuguese adventurer, her father and Ana Vicenta, and in here, I put that Sargento Mayor and Primer Fundador, or first founder of the village of Santa Fe. Mr. Carpenter has a document there, an original document. Let me see how I documented and gave a copy of this. But here is the copy of where he was appointed, Sargento Mayor. And Sargento Mayor, of course, is a position within the military rank at that time. Of course, they went on, Francisco Gomez Robledo and the Pedro Soto Godoy, again, became very influential politically, religiously, and so forth. The document that Mr. Carpenter showed me, in fact, is a document where he was tried for practicing Judaism. It took some years for that case to get settled, but the consequences of what?
He was tried in Mexico City.
Tried in Mexico City, part of the Inquisition.
Yeah, but was found not guilty, but by the time he got back to Santa Fe, all his property had been distributed to other people and he got in poverty.
And of course, I think that brings a whole separate subject of the Gomez family, which initially you take the Z off and had an S, and of course that would pronounce Gomez, Gomes, and I think that's where the practicing Judaism was to take place. I noticed in some of my travels in terms of in cemeteries, it's not uncommon now to see the markers, the tombstone markers, with Star of David. Many of these individuals lived their life as they did, and I think practiced their religion in private, right? And I don't know if, in fact, the funeral home director or the person that carved out the headstones may have been Jewish, but the Star of David appears in a lot of cemeteries. Or, in fact, at that point, then they sort of made it public that they were practicing Judaism. The Franciscan friars at that time were responsible for Francisco Gomez de Robledo, the charge against him, and of course, that's a separate story. Daughters of Francesca Gomez Rivero, Maria Lucero, wife of Lázaro de Mesquia, Inez, wife of Juan de Escala, and Luisa, the wife of Pedro Antonio de Esparza. Again, second family, and again, spawning off a really elaborate or long line of descendants. The son of Francisco Gomez Robledo, Francisco Lucero, and then his two marriages, Josefa Lopez de Mijalva and Catalina de Espinola. I point this out here because for a lot of us in Mexico, La Conquistadora represents a very significant image, right? And Francesca took the stanchion during the Pueblo Revolt and took her to Mexico for safekeeping and then returned with that. Okay? Again, to me, that's in the library, in the Fran Hinkochan's library. Okay, here's where I, yes?
In the chapel.
Same statue. Here's where I outline the descendancy from Pedro Lucero. Okay, and then here is my father, myself, my oldest daughter, and my oldest granddaughter. Okay. Then we're related. Nice meeting.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you my address so that. Of those 85,000 names that I have in the database, I need to send them a Christmas card. I don't have all the mailing addresses. But there's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 generations. Okay. 16 generations, so multiply, I'm not very good at math. My wife tells me, I told her, honey, how could we get money with five checks left? She's the mathematician in the family. What's 16 times 20? Approximately 320 years. So I guess if I were to get famous or I get an appointment from the Obama administration, I could probably say safely that I've had a presence in New Mexico at least 300 years. I won't go 400 years just as a lesson on the other one. But it's a very interesting point. Is right here, Maria Viviana Romero, my daughter of Jose Polito Romero, and Maria Viviana. She is a sister. She had five sisters, right? And those five sisters, turns out that my wife's great great grandmother and my great great grandmother were sisters. Okay. So one of the things I tell my nieces and nephews, I think they need to check with me before they go on a date, because they may end up somewhere along the line here, right? So it's not uncommon. I guess, what, if you go one, two, three, four, five generations, I guess that's okay. We didn't need to get a dispensation as in the early years, people in the first or second a degree of consanguinity would have to get special permission to marry, right? But anyway, there is a listing, and I take great pride in terms of that Lucero de Godoy. On the Francesca Gomez Robledo, again, this is a sister, Bernardo de Toral y Raval, and then it goes again, crossing in here during the Jose Maria Romero, Jose Polito Romero era, right? So, in New Mexico, and even, it's not uncommon. I remember I had a son that attended the Air Force Academy. Close to his graduation, they had a reception. And one of his fellow cadets in the same squadron was from California. We happened to be visiting with myself and my son's sponsoring family. And we noticed his name was Trujillo. And of course, always thinking, we asked about Trujillo. He said, well, I used to be from Colorado. He said, oh, where are you? He said, you guys have never here. It's a small town. Well, I said, try me. He said, I come from a small town, too. I said, oh, I said, you guys wouldn't hear it. He said, the name is Capulin. Well, my getaway sponsor, of course, was from Capulin. My father was from Capulin. My wife was from Capulin. He said, well, tell us. Well, it turned out that we're related. Of course, my son and his daughter had been cadet mates at the Air Force Academy for about 4 years. Right? Again, you never know how these crossings will take place. Jose Antonio Escobar, in the Palace of the Governors in the 17th century, writes this notion of a triple wedding, numerous reference to the Casa Reales de Palacio, based on new research findings. Okay, Jose Antonio Escobar, of course, along with Cooligan, has written the classic book, The Spanish Recolonization. And again, from some of the lost records of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe that were found in Durango, has come back those issues. Anytime you do genealogy or research of this type, the notion of land grants has to come up. Okay? I know there's still a lot of issues regarding these in Southern Colorado, Northern Mexico. There are still a number of active land grants in Las Vegas, New Mexico. We have the Tecolote land grant, San Miguel del Valle, in Northern Mexico, of course, the three categories, of course, in here, community for grazing purposes, grants to individuals, and then grants to Pueblo Indian groups. In this research that I've done, I've come across the San Martin land grant, approximately in 1703, the Diego Lucero de Bedoy, 61,000 acres west and north of the Taos Pueblo grant between Arroyo Hondo and Ranchito. Okay. Jose Antonio Lucero de Bedoy, a small grant in Santa Fe, and of course in the Canada de Cochiti in 1728 to 1800. Again, that's not that far back. Here again, according to Jose Antonio Esquivel, talks about the relationship between the Lucero de Bedoys and perhaps it was Francisco Gomez de Robledo, the father of Francesca, who was very influential in the daughter of getting married to Pedro Antonio and the Pedro Lucero de Bedoy. Again, I think there was some interest in there in terms of increased political presence or religious presence or whatever. But that marriage took place. I came across a young man at Fort Lewis College, right? And he talks here about speaking proudly of his family, pulls from his wallet official documentation dating back to 1500, but in relation to Pedro de Sousa Bedoy, native of Mexico City, 10 great-grandfathers back, and his wife, Petronila de Zamora, first settled in the United States. Fort Lewis College is Again, during the fellowship period, I did use extensively the Fran Hedico Library. Very outstanding staff there. I was pleasantly surprised that my neighbor works at the Fran Hedico Chavez Library, so I think that saved me a lot of work. I do have some concerns, but again, these are probably very good reasons. It is a closed library. Right, you can't just wander around and visit stacks and so forth and so on. You need to go through the protocol. And, you know, I guess for a guy like me, I love going through stacks and whatever libraries there are. But if you know, friend of which I was similar to here, the State Archives, their records are very well maintained and very well kept. I did do some work, and any time, of course, the Spanish Archives of New Mexico, again, are a must. Outstanding. I think that's where New Mexico really shines in terms of maintaining the Spanish archives. I mentioned the Albuquerque Library, downtown, in Old Town, the National Hispanic Cultural Center, the origins of the Mexico families, and the work by Donald Lucero and then John Kessel. All right? Questions? Comments?
Ron, I actually would love to know a little bit more about your work in the Spanish archives. In a way, that's why the fellowship was given, just so, because it's one thing to understand the genealogy, right? It's a shell. But it, for me, it's empty until you actually show the complicated lives as it is revealed, I think, in part, because it is singular perspectives in those archives. Nonetheless, it gives us a little bit more nuance that you don't get in a genealogy that is just a framework, right? And so the Spanish archives really complicate, show how messy history is, how violent history is. And so I want to hear more about what you did in the Spanish Archives of New Mexico to flesh out these experiences of the Lucero and the
family. Well, I think that's probably where I spend 90% of my effort in terms of the Spanish Archives. But again, for the reals, it takes a lot of patience, a lot of dedication, a lot of perseverance. My ripe age and my eyesight is to the point where you really have to look very closely. And that's probably even true with a lot of the church records also. Anytime you have handwritten documentation, if other people's handwriting is like mine, it gets to be a problem. But I think the willingness to be able to do the grunt work and to get in there, in fact, as you pointed out, reveals a lot of the information in terms of the history of New Mexico. Did I answer your question? Any other questions, comments?
Have you had a chance to go back to Spain and do any research there?
I've traveled to Spain. I did have an opportunity at the, where is it, I have the name of the tongue, the Granada, where Queen Isabella and Stella Colón actually signed papers in that room. I've actually wanted to go into a couple of the communities, the regions in Spain. In Oviedo, Spain, for the Valdez, the Vries, and of course the region of the Mesta region, but I have not had a chance to physically do that. That's still on my list of unfinished tasks. Nowadays, you get a little worried about international travel, and when I was in Madrid, Spain, it was an eye-opener experience to see the terminal that got bombed. And I think I'm a little safer, in my older age, getting a little safer doing research in New Mexico. I don't want to speak ill, but if you get in some of those areas that sometimes people are not too user-friendly to America. But there is a rich history. It would take considerable time to do it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.